You're listening to Mobile Bunny by Moomoo, demystifying markets one episode at a time. This content is strictly for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be interpreted as a recommendation or investment guidance. Keep in mind that this information is not personalized and should not be the sole basis for your investment decisions, as there may be additional factors to consider.
Welcome to Mobile Money by Moomoo. I'm your host, Justin Zaks, Vice President of Strategy at Moomoo Technologies. I've spent my whole career in and around financial markets. This is a show that helps investors gain a better understanding of markets and their money. I had the pleasure of speaking with Taylor Price, known to her followers as Priceless Tay, and we were able to discuss a lot of different topics today. Real world money issues many of the young people are facing, some of the myths Gen Z has about investing, why it's important to have hopes and dreams, and how that translates into developing financial goals.
Hi, yes, my name is Taylor Price, also known as Priceless Tay on social media, which if you're coming from my platform, that's probably what you know me by, Priceless Tay.
Tell us a little bit about your journey into the world of podcasting and financial influencing.
Ooh, well, it started off in 2017. I originally wanted to be a neurosurgeon. I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to help serve people in that way because of my own medical history. And unfortunately, when I started college, it wasn't looking good. My own medical history wasn't looking good for me. And so I ended up dropping out and asking, who knows best, my mom, what to do with my life. And way back in the day, she graduated with a degree in finance, which is pretty uncommon. I don't know, you know, when she went to college. And so she said, you know, this is a good topic. You can get a job here. Go for it. And so I did. But what I didn't realize was that there was a huge difference between corporate finance and personal finance. And so I started my new finance degree, not knowing anything about either worlds, and then hopping into analyzing companies like Amazon and Apple and Facebook. And I was like, whoa, hang on. I don't even have like two commas in my like bank account yet. Like, can we rewind a little bit and talk about, you know, my own bank account, my own credit score? I'm just turning 18 at the time. Like, can we talk about taxes? And so after realizing and speaking to my counselors that there wasn't any sort of personal finance education and that this was strictly corporate finance, doing research online at the time, only 6 out of 50 states in the United States required a personal finance course for testing in high school. And little upstate New York, where I grew up, did not require that. And so me, as a finance major, analyzing things with 2, 3, 4 commas was way out of whack when I didn't even know my own one comma situation. And so I started this blog that really was just more about transparency on, it's okay, like I'm a finance major and I really don't know what's going on with my finances. I'm learning in school, but it's not really talked about. And so I'm here to share my own personal financial journey, why I'm opening up a Roth IRA at 18, why I started to build up my credit score at 18, and why maybe you should check this out too. And that's kind of how it started.
No, that's really fascinating. And I think that's very true. You know, finance generally is not taught at the high school and even college level most of the time. And when it is, it's this very theoretical, I'm going to make that my career, which ends up being whatever, 2% of the population. But everyone else that wants some of this personal finance knowledge is kind of left out in, mm-hmm. you know, in the lurch. And so I'm really interested when you first started, what were the topics you were talking about and what kind of feedback did you get from a lot of your listeners at the beginning and your viewers?
Like I mentioned, I stumbled upon this treasure chest or like diamond in the rough, which was the Roth IRA. And so that was super captivating for me. And it was super captivating and interesting for a lot of my audience as well, too. So a lot of my content started off there.
Yeah, that's something that we've talked a lot about on this podcast previously, is that power of compounding. And it's really fascinating when you run some of that, and it's not real complicated math, like most people can kind of understand it, but when you really understand it and really understand, and you're able to start young too, the that power is just amazing.
Yeah, a lot of young people, and I felt this way at one point too, they think that they don't have enough money right now, that you need to be rich to start investing, which is absolutely incorrect. And they think they're too young to start investing. They think investing's for older generations. I think a lot of Gen Z people want to do this, like financial independence, retire early. And investing, I believe, is truly one of the ways to help us get there.
Yeah. And you just talked about how Gen Z wasn't really sure if it's, you know, if I have enough money. And at Moomoo, you know, we don't have an account minimum. So people are able to get in at those low levels. And it's the, you know, we're preaching the same type of thing, like whatever you have, get started. And the views are starting to change. And one of the other things I found of these changing views was influenced by the pandemic. That really changed how people work and studied and reprioritize what they want to do with their lives. They're stuck at home, nowhere to go, nowhere to spend their money. Some people lost their jobs, so they have to worry about emergency savings, budgeting. Some are receiving great stimulus payments and they have a job, so they're, you know, making out quite well. And then they find investing. What was your experience during the pandemic and some of these younger Gen Z people? What happened with them investing wise, budgeting wise, savings wise?
So I happened to be on spring break when my college said, hey, don't come back to school. We're going remote. And where was I? I was in Florida. And so I am so blessed in that my mom lives here. And so I was able to spend the majority of the pandemic in the beautiful sunshine, working on my side hustle, getting my studies done. And I didn't have to worry about, you know, paying rent and things like that because I lived under my parents' roof. And as a young person as well, too, the more money that you can save now to invest, you'll be thanking your parents for allowing you them, you know, to stay like rent free. And so my situation was a little bit different than most, I would say. But one of the things that I really ended up telling a lot of people, and this was the realization that I had too, like I said, I started off talking about investing. And at the time, people were getting these stimulus checks. They might have gotten furloughed, the student loan debt, payments paused, things of that nature. And I came to recognize that most Americans at that time did not even have a $400 emergency fund ready in case if an emergency had occurred. So that's kind of when I transitioned talking about the whole money tree, I like to call it, from, you know, earning, budgeting, to paying off debt, to investing, and things like that.
Yeah, so it seems there was a real tale of two cities with this pandemic, and some people like you were able to make it work very well, but I'm sure you had other peers that were struggling. And what were some of their struggles, and were you able to help any of these people?
Totally. Yeah. One of the struggles was that they had gotten laid off. They were recent college grads, first ones in, first ones out kind of ordeal. And so what, aside from the emergency fund, which I just covered, one of the things that I said to do was start building up your specialty skills, skill sets that are both soft skills and, you know, harder, more professional skills, because when you start to skill stack, it's a lot harder to replace you than if you just come in with your resume knowing what, you know, everybody else knows. Like if you know, I like in my example, I can do video editing, marketing copy, sales. I know about personal finance. I know about corporate finance now with my degree. I can do public speaking. And so thinking about all of these skill sets together make me a lot less replaceable than that of somebody who might only know one or two skill sets.
That's like be the Swiss Army knife. So you can pull out right. That tool whenever you need and make yourself useful.
Yeah.
That's a great way to be and a great advice for someone at any age. And speaking mm-hmm. of, you know, getting started, You know, when did you first really get in? You talked about the Roth IRA, but when did you really get started in investing? And what have you really learned about investing so far?
I believe my first investment was in 2017. It might have been 2018, but I believe it was 2017. And boy, back then, it, you know, social media was plagued with get rich quick. And this was one of the alluring factors as well, too, that I saw at the time, which also was intriguing. And what I came to realize is that timing, you know, you can't really time the market. It's time in the market. And that's my own personal belief. And through the power of investing on an either daily, monthly, quarterly, semi-annually, or annual basis over a long period of time, I used to think that it would, you know, you had to put a lot more time, energy, and effort into building a portfolio that was kind of risk adverse. And I came to find that, you know, just by staying true to your principles, not getting nervous when there's a red day or there's a green day, and if you should cut it now or diamond hands or, you know, a lot of these common Gen Z slang currently in the stock market. I'm kind of like the old and true Warren Buffett investing principles now. And that was quite different than when I first began.
So when you did first begin, did you make any mistakes? And if so, what were these mistakes?
Oh, yeah. I, at the time, did not recognize the, you know, pattern day trading rule, like buying and selling, buying and selling, buying and selling. And so you would get like a flag or like, hey, you're not supposed to do this if you don't make a certain amount or, you know. And so those were like some initial first things, because again, I really wasn't looking necessarily at the very long term. I was trying to make short term gains. And again, it's just a lot different now than, you know, after completing my degree and being in it for so long, as well as having my portfolio live now, you know, it's like 5 years old now. It's just a lot different.
No, that's a very good piece of advice. And for the listeners out there, you know, that want to know what pattern day trading is, it's basically this idea that if you do not have more than $25,000 in your account, you're limited on the number of day trades. And a day trade is when you buy something and then sell it on the same day over a certain period of time. And you really have to keep track of those. And the brokerage itself usually has a way to keep track, but they won't warn you when you only have one left. And if you do get flagged, you're not going to be able to do any more trades. And so this is something you really have to pay attention to. And that's a very important point. And that gets me kind of into this next subject of, you know, I think Gen Z is investing faster and more than most generations have at their age. But there's also these common myths that they have about money. So what are some of these myths that they have, and what are the hurdles they face in getting started with investing?
First up, like I mentioned, and I had this belief too, is that you have to be wealthy. Like, you see a lot of the people talking about investing are people who are wealthy and have a high net worth. And once again, that is just not the case. Like you said, you don't have any account minimums. At some point, you can even do fractional investing, which
tell me a little bit about the fractional shares and what they are like. I try to tell people, you know, so many stocks now, it's like an $800 stock. And they say, well, that's my whole count. Can I buy one share? What are fractional shares?
Right.
How do they work?
It's like buying a little piece of the pie. Let's say like you don't want the full cheese pizza. You don't have the capacity to eat the full cheese pizza. You just want one slice right now. That is what fractional investing is. So if there's a stock that's $1,000, and like you said, that is your whole account right now, that would be kind of crazy just to go one thing all in. I just want a little taste test. I just want, you know, maybe $10 or $50 of that $1,000 slice. And so that's really what fractional investing is.
Yeah, that's really good. And it brings up the topic of diversification. The idea, so you know, you just mentioned it. So if you have an $800 account, and you buy one share for $800, you're really betting the farm on one, you know, this one company. Maybe they do well, maybe they do not very well, but that's a lot more risk than if you are able to chop that up into, you know, and buy 100 right. different companies for $8, which is the same, you know, the same amount, 800, but you have a lot more diversification because now you're going out investing in 100 different companies and your fortune rides on the results of this overall diversified portfolio, which can in certain instances lower your risk.
I do want to say speaking about like the pizza and having just one slice, one of the popular topics that I guess I'd come up with or analogies in relationship to the stock market was this. I came up with this because I thought market, grocery store, you know, supermarket, whatever. And so you think about like having a healthy diet, right? You go to the grocery store, this thing that's the stock market. Then you have your fruits and vegetables, you have like your deli, your seafood, your dairy, your bakery and breads, and then you have the frozen foods and all the junk in between. You can think of that like as if you're going into the stock market. And so they say you want to have like a healthy diet that's composed of a lot of different fruits and vegetables, a lot of different meats, a lot of different, you know, products and things like that. You're not just going to eat apples all day long. Like you need to have a well-balanced looking plate. And so when you go inside the store, you do your shopping on, I'm going to get this fruits and vegetables. I'm going to get these meats. And I'm going to get this dairy. And you can think of these different aspects, just like sectors within the stock market, that some might be a little more wild than others, like the tech sector or, you know, utilities, whereas, you know, others are a little bit more conservative. And so I like to, when I think about building a portfolio and teaching younger people, even like what is the stock market, I think going back to this grocery store analogy of you have these different sectors, these sectors have different traits to them. They provide different things for you. Like, for example, you could say stocks that pay dividends or high yield dividends as being, you know, vegetables or something like that. And then when you go to the checkout, there you have like your broker, and at one point in time, not really anymore, you used to have to pay commission, and you can think of that person as the cashier. But now you just kind of, you know, we're so lucky in that so many platforms have commission-free, you know, trades. And so that's kind of the little analogy of the stock market grocery store principle.
So what you're really telling me is if my portfolio is all strawberry ice cream and pizza, maybe I need to take a look, huh?
Yeah, check it out.
check out some healthier options. The other thing I hear a lot from younger people is, you know, you need money to make money. You know, how can people with lower income get invested, you know, get started? Because a lot of them they're just struggling to pay their bills, like rent's due. You know, maybe they have a car or breaks down, they want to have their emergency savings fund. Like, they might not have a lot of money for investing. What do you usually tell those types of people?
First off, like every dollar counts. And so with fractional investing now, even if you're doing $5 a week, that matters like decades from now. What I do like to say, and what one of my mentors told me some time ago, is that a lot of people focus on cutting back the pennies and not focus on how can they earn more. And so like I talked about side hustles in the beginning, it's super important that like after you cut some of your subscriptions, $10 here, $20 there, there's only so much that you can do until you're at the finite bedrock level where you're just purely living off of needs. All right, now you got to focus on how can you accelerate your earning capabilities. And so like I said, skill stacking, going on, starting a social media account, talking about one of your favorite things, whether you think it's ridiculous or not, people might find value in that. Really trying to build up that earning capability. And it might even be as simple as asking for a raise. It's a topic a lot of people are scared to do, but that could make a huge impact. Within the next 2 weeks that you hear this from today, if you go to your employer and ask for that raise,
Yeah, that's a very great point you bring up about expenses and income. And to me, investing is part of personal finance overall. And how do you view personal finance, you know, like the tree, you know, the idea that there are different branches? You've talked a little bit about this with some of your other users before.
A little backstory on this. Growing up, my parents owned a small industrial uniform rental company. And one of the things that I heard all of the time, Taylor, money doesn't grow on trees. And so after many years of hearing this my entire life and then jumping into this whole realm of personal finance, I'm like, let's figure out how we can make like money grow on trees, because I'm so tired of hearing this. Like, we need to figure this thing out. And so first, it's planting your seed. And this is the difference between having a growth mindset and having a scarcity mindset. You need to be in the right mindset, you know, emotional, physiological state in order to achieve what you want to achieve out of life, and having that abundance and believing that you can do, because if you don't believe that you can do, you won't. That's like step one. Step two, after you planted your seed, you have like your roots kind of growing. And I like to think of these roots as your emergency funds and savings accounts. So in the case that a storm comes by and, you know, your entire tree is shaking and branches are falling off and like the trunk is like trying to stay there, you got these roots planted really strong in the case that a pandemic happens and your earning potential just got severed. Your tree trunk, your primary source of income is gone. Oh goodness, what do I do? Well, your tree is still existing because it's got these roots. You got the emergency fund. You have the savings accounts. So that's the bottom portion of the tree. Like I mentioned, the trunk itself is your primary source of income. Bark, tree bark. It actually provides a lot more than you think. It provides protection for trees. And I like to think of this tree bark as insurance, whether that's for a lot of people my age, that's like rent insurance. Maybe for homeowners, it's homeowners insurance or car insurance. But these are things that will help in the long run in case there is, again, once, you know, there might be a storm. And then this is like the best part, because a lot of us we like trees, but we really like the fruits and stuff that trees produce. And so you get up to the branches. These could be different types of investments or side hustles that turn into a business, and they can make, you know, your fruits of your labor, starting from the trunk and your primary source of income, they can develop money on its own, or, you know, the fruits on their own. And obviously when you spend money, your tree leaves are falling off. And when you're saving money and growing money, your leaves are growing. And so that's the pretty much the money tree analogy. And the last but not least, there's different economies, the global economy, you know, United States, even just by state, depending. And so wherever your tree is planted or that environment is located, that external environment will affect your tree and how it's growing. So that's the whole priceless tag tree analogy.
That's a great analogy. And I think you've given listeners a great overview of some ideas on how to get started, how to plant those seeds, how to get that tree growing initially. So let's maybe shift to another analogy of fitness and working out. And so once we have that tree, how do we keep it healthy? How do we keep it up and running? What are some tips you might share for financial fitness?
Ooh, my mom told me, and she's like, I've mentioned her on several accounts. She's definitely had a strong impact on my life and the way that I think. She used to tell me, and I don't know if she came up with this, piss poor planning leads to piss poor results. And so same thing applies with your finances. In order to keep the tree healthy, it's not, you know, the tree isn't going to water itself. Like you have to do the pruning. You have to, you know, give it love and nurture and take care of it. And so that comes with a plan, setting smart goals, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely goals.
Oh, that's very true. And going back to, you know, but sometimes people get swept up and they eat that strawberry ice cream and they're eating that pizza and maybe they're doing it for a little too long. Maybe they're falling off that treadmill or maybe not getting on at all. I mean, what are some of the bad financial habits young people get into? And what are some ways they might be able to avoid those bad habits?
The first is so many people are taking out enormous student loans. And when you take a look at the amount that you make from a college education versus the amount that, you know, college tuition has inflated, it is astronomical. So you end up with thousands to hundreds of thousands of dollars in student loan debt when you are in an entry position at a job that it will take a very long time to get at a pace and rate that you can afford to pay those off. So first things first, to me, is really analyzing what is the options that and ways in which that I can avoid debt, whether that's getting a scholarship, whether that's postponing it and building up some of your skill set, whether that's, you know, getting grants or looking at student loan aid, something along those lines, in that you're not finishing at 22 years old with this huge amount of debt. And for some careers, that's what you have to do. But like I mentioned, there are scholarships and there are assets that a lot of young people don't really take the time, energy, and effort to. And they just believe that having this quick college degree will help them get going when there's not even financial education on how to pay off that debt. The second big one that I would say as well too is generally young people living beyond their means. And I honestly think that there's a balance between like living below your means, but within your needs. So there's like this sweet spot where yes, you can financially thrive and not just survive. There's this balance on the scale, if you like to think about it that way. And so a lot of young people need to recognize, and it won't happen just by keeping all the numbers in their head. They have to write it out and check and actually go in and see, hey, this is what I got. This is what I need. This is what I want.
Yeah. And I think you brought up a very good point there before with, you know, having that huge student debt. And it can seem overwhelming when you have a six-figure debt and you're like, wow, it's going to take me 20 years or however long you think it will take you, at least if you keep your current salary. And it's just overwhelming for some young people. And I feel like a lot of times everyone thinks, well, the boomers kind of have all this money. They own the entire housing market. How can we get on the property ladder? Is the situation hopeless for Gen Z? And maybe you could shed a little positivity. Is this a hopeless situation, or is that time they have for compounding and getting in going to work in their favor?
If you, again, have the capability to live with your parents and save all the money that you can and allocate it, it will make such the biggest difference. And, you know, so many people, a house is the biggest expense they will ever incur in their life. And so living a few extra years with your parents, instead of like going into a house that takes a lot of work, a lot of time, there's structural foundation error, there's like a whole bunch of stuff going wrong with it, versus staying and saving in a safe, comfortable environment that you're okay to live in, that maybe doesn't require a lot of rent, and saving that money to have a lot better outcomes, that I believe is extremely desirable. And so the focus should really be on these longer term habits, again, rather than the short, glittery, fancy, short term gains.
Well, thank you for those comments. The other thing I think a lot of young people are shocked by is they get their first job and they're saying, I'm making X amount of money. Then they get their first paycheck and they're saying, well, where'd all my money go? And it went to Uncle Sam and it went to taxes. And we're right around tax time right now. It's you know, we're right in the middle of April. So any thoughts on taxes and how does that work within personal finance?
A lot of people, and I you know, when I first started investing, I did not realize that there's short-term capital tax gains and long-term capital tax gains. And so when you're buying and selling in a short amount of time for less than a year, that will be taxed at a higher amount than if you are holding for over a year or a longer term period. And so, you know, a lot of younger investors need to take that into consideration, especially during tax time.
No, that's very true. And it's kind of that the story of the tortoise and the hare, you know, those long-term gains can be taxed at a lower rate. And sometimes you're going to do better with the long-term holding. And so hopefully right. They're able to get over some of these fears and really build on their hopes and dreams. And in that respect, you know, why is it important for people in Gen Z to have financial goals?
By having financial goals, you can set yourself up for financial freedom. By having this goal written out, you're able to have the drive to want to achieve something. When you don't have a goal, your money will control you instead of you controlling your money. And so when I talk about this, it's the idea that you controlling your money can eventually give you the financial freedom. And at the end of the day, money is, to me, it's just like an energy source. I can give money in order so I can spend more time with my family or get food or whatever that might be. And so this element of setting those financial goals and working your way towards them and eventually achieve them overall helps with your financial well-being. It helps you have this healthy money tree. And yeah, go plant your money seeds.
And what are some good general financial goals to have? And then maybe you could tell us a little bit if you have your own particular financial goals.
Always start off with an emergency fund. You never know what life is going to give. You might be at the highest point or lowest point of your life, but by having this emergency fund, you are setting yourself up for success that you may or may not be aware of at, you know, even this point in time. So that would be the biggest one. The second is really staying consistent with your budget. And like I mentioned a little bit earlier, if money controls you, it's a much different situation than you controlling your money. And so by being able to tell your money, it's going to go here, it's going to go there, you're going to do this for me, there's a lot different feeling and sense of peace, ownership, and confidence versus that money kind of just slipping away from your bank account and you not feeling in power, in charge, or in control of where it's going. And then the last is just to have consistent habits over time, dollar cost averaging when it comes to investing. Like, there is so much power by simple compounding that happens over time by investing with platforms like Moomoo. They're like, you can do it. And I would say those are the biggest ones. As far as my personal goals, this sounds crazy, but I would eventually like to create a portfolio where I can earn a big six-figure income without having to do work at one point in my life. So that's kind of the goal that I have. I'm definitely not there yet, but maybe in the next few years, a few decades, I will be.
No, and we all hope you reach those goals, and I hope everyone reaches those goals. And it sounds like mm-hmm. you're already well on your way. But when you first started out, What's something you wish you knew back then that you know now about investing?
Times change. The market was hot. Then the pandemic happened and reality kind of set in. And it was like, oh, okay, they have some bad days too. So I would really say is that, you know, the market fluctuates over time. But over time, if you take a look at the S&P 500, it has had this kind of upward trajectory, kind of going down 1 point, but going higher than previously. And so when you take a look at it that way, it's like, okay.
Yeah. And you bring up a very good point there of this idea that the gains and losses are significant over a very short time period. So how do you manage these realistic expectations for investing? And maybe right now we're seeing a period where many people are exceeding their expectations. If your expectations are making 5% or 7%, maybe you know a lot better. Maybe you've already made that this year and it's only April. And so how should an investor be handling those types of expectations? Do you make adjustments or do you say, you know, what should you do with that?
I think all investments should start with a plan. So referring back to the initial plan that you set off with, before you go and jump in and change things. So were you investing because of shorter term goals, or were you investing in longer term goals for things like retirement? Or were you investing into a 529 for your kids' college education or education? And so it's a lot heavier question that I could answer in, you know, the next few minutes. But I would say, like, refer back to the plan in which you set off. And very simply put, very hard to actually execute is not letting your emotions get into play when it comes to the market. Because when you're watching CNBC in the morning, or you're like scrolling on Moomoo News, like, those topics can be like, whoa, like, there's this amazing opportunity. Oh, wait, there's like something's going on with my portfolio right now. There's a whole bunch of different aspects. But when you refer back to the plan in which you set, you can have a more rational, level set, you know, being.
That's great. And I have just one last question on this investing topic. You know, you tell a lot of people certain advice, but what's the best financial advice you've received, and how has that helped you in your investment journey?
I'm going back to what my mom said about the piss poor planning leads to piss poor results. It's so true. Like, if you don't have that plan, goodness, you must be super lucky if you just like won the lottery or something. But when you have that plan, it's one step closer to achieving those goals. It's like a chicken with its head cut off. Like, I don't know how you not get your goals without having some sort of plan and vision that, you know, you work backwards. I want this amount of month, this amount per year, per month in retirement. Okay, how much do I need in my entire portfolio to, you know, get those payments back at a good withdrawal rate?
That's great. Well, Teller, we thank you so much for being on the podcast today. Can you tell us a little bit more on where our listeners can learn more about you and can find more about you?
Yes. You can go to @PricelessTay, PRICELESSTAY, or Taylor Price, that's my name, on Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, TikTok, all the main platforms there are out there today. And you can also visit our website, PricelessTay.com.
That's great. And hopefully everyone can also check out Moomoo.com/US. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to write it in the comments of wherever you downloaded it or listened to it from. Thank you very much.
Give it a 5-star.
The opinions expressed are those of the host and any guest speaker, and not necessarily those of Moomoo Technologies, Inc. or its affiliates. The podcast is provided for informational and educational purposes only and is not a recommendation or endorsement of any particular investment or investment strategy that may be mentioned or covered in the podcast. All investments involve risk and the loss of principal as possible. Past performance does not indicate or guarantee future success. Moomoo is not affiliated with any outside guests or their companies. Information provided in this podcast is general in nature and may not be appropriate for all investors. The Moomoo app is an online trading platform offered by Moomoo Technologies, Inc. Securities, brokerage products, and related services available through the Moomoo app are offered by Moomoo Financial, Inc., a member of FINRA, SIPC.